Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome the award-winning composer, Gerald Cohen. Please join us as we talk about the chamber music, choral music, and operas that he's written. He's also on faculty at the Jewish Theological Seminary and Hebrew Union College. Before we begin, please hit the like and subscribe buttons. It's free and easy, and it really helps the channel a lot. Oh, and I promise, no spam. Thanks. And we are welcoming to the program, Gerald Cohen. Thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure to be here. Really great to meet you, Roger.
And you too, as well. You're a marvelous composer, for those who are unfamiliar with your work. It's just amazing. I had an opportunity to... this gives me an excuse to deep dive into people that I'm not always real familiar with. And
excellent.
I really enjoy your music. You're a wonderful composer. You've written three operas that I'm aware of. Is that right?
I've written two full-length operas, one shorter one, and then a one that's in progress, or it's in formation, so to speak. we could talk about all those, yeah.
But the one that I guess we should start with is the one called Steal a Pencil for Me, right? Can you give us a background on that? Now, that came out about a dozen years ago, I believe, right?
Right. Well, I'll just give the very quick. So I wrote it first in 2012 and had its first workshop in 2013. 2018 is when Opera Colorado did the premiere production of it. And then 2022 is when we recorded the album, which came out last year, which is, last summer, which is why we're, I think that was the immediate impetus for our talk
right
today, was the release of the album, which is on the Sona Luminous label.
So. Now, that's a two CD. It's a big one.
Yeah, it's a 2-hour opera, so I guess it
takes a little time. Give us a background. What's the storyline?
So the storyline is it's a very, very deeply personal one. For one thing, it's basically a love story that's set during the time of the Holocaust. In Amsterdam and in two concentration camps, in Westerbork in the Netherlands and Bergen-Belsen in Germany. And the main characters are Jaap and Ina Polak, or at that time Jaap Polak and Ina Soup, who the reason it's so personal is that I knew them very well. I'm a cantor at a synagogue. I'm a singer, and one of my hats besides being a composer is that I'm a cantor at a synagogue, and they were congregants of mine for many years. So before even having the idea of doing the opera, I had known them for almost 25 years.
Oh my.
They're an amazing couple, and the basic story, and I can go into it more, is that they fell in love while they were in the concentration camps. Jaap at that point, one thing that makes it sort of operatic, and Jaap at that point was married to another woman who he had a bad marriage with. They were planning to get divorced, but they were staying together to protect each other during the war. Ina had a boyfriend that she loved very much, and he had been seized and taken away by the Nazis, and she didn't know if he was still alive. In fact, as we find out as the opera goes on, he's dead. He comes back in the opera later as kind of a vision or a ghost in her mind. So it's a love story of the two of them, but it's a complicated thing because of all their other relationships. So it's set in in this history of this very horrible time, but at the same time, it's a very hopeful story. I mean, it's obviously has a lot of like it should be in a story, has a lot of difficulties that they go through, but then they do survive and they are together, and as they did in real life. I became cantor of the synagogue in 1987, and I knew them ever since then. And Jaap especially was very passionate in talking about his experience in the Holocaust and the lessons therefore of not discriminating against people, of of the dangers of racism, of, you know, anti-Semitism, but in a very, in a very humane and, you know, the point of treating everyone, you know, well. So he had, anyway, so he spoke a lot about it, and they had written a, they, this was kind of based on letters that they were able to sneak to each other while they were in the concentration camps. Their letters, which had been found by their daughter when she was a teenager, and then they translated into English, were then published as a book. And then they made a documentary about their experience, which was a wonderful, by Michelle Ohayon, which is available, you know, sometimes on Netflix or something. Certainly you can look it up. Same name, Steal a Pencil for Me. And by this point, Yap and Ina were not so young anymore. So I guess around 2010, 2000, yeah, when Yap was 97 and Ina 87, I after the documentary came out, I had the idea that this really might be an amazing opera. And so I proposed the idea to them on the phone, and they were kind of taken aback at first. And then Yap said in his humorous way, "Write it quickly." You know, I'm 97 years old. So I did write it quickly. And so we did the first, I found it a fantastic librettist. Her name is Deborah Brevoort. She's a well-known playwright and librettist. We worked very intensively with Yap and Ina to create the story, to get as much of, you know, to really understand as much of the backstory as we could, and how best to tell the story on stage. And then for the premiere in the workshop premiere, where we performed the whole opera, it was at my synagogue and at the Jewish Theological Seminary where I teach. Yap and Ina were there for it. They were there. They met the cast at a luncheon in the days before. And then they were there for both performances, and Yap spoke a little bit. And it was so amazing for the cast to meet them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and for them, you know, they were performing the opera with them sitting in the front row. And of course, amazing for Yap and Ina to see their story portrayed on stage. And it was a very, very deeply emotional, you know, experience. And it was thrilling. Unfortunately, you know, they died fairly soon after that. Ina, who was actually an amazingly vibrant 90-year-old, had cancer and died about a year later, actually before Yap, which was very surprising. So they didn't get to see the full production, at Opera Colorado, but their daughter Margaret did. So that the personal connection with this has been, you know, of course, is very, very significant.
So you kind of swiped, excuse me, kind of swiped one of my questions. I was going to ask if they were in my toes, they've been stepped on. But I was going to ask if they had been involved, which I think is marvelous. And, you were able to stay pretty true to the story. You didn't have to take too many liberties.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, anytime you put something on stage or a film or a novel or whatever, you do have to take liberties, right? I mean, there's no, because you can't.
Well, but I've talked to people about opera in the past that know nothing. And they say, well, it's never in English. It's always in, you know, German,
right,
or Italian.
No, people ask me, what language you write in Italian? Well, no, I'm American, so I'm going to write. I mean, you know, conceivably, I could have written it in Dutch, but I don't know Dutch, so.
But well, I've explained to people. I said, you don't understand that. I said, if you go to a movie or you go to a play, and the gentleman says to the young lady, "I love you," That's pretty much it. In an opera, it can take them 10 minutes to sing. So the storyline is usually kind of simple, because it has to be. Otherwise, you're going to be there till Thursday.
Right. That's an important thing. But especially for librettists, people who write the libretti, have to learn that very much, to be leaving room for the music and for it not to be too long. And that's why someone, you know, like Deborah, my librettist, who's very experienced at this, she's just really, really excellent at that. But it is, I mean, that part is in a way similar to a movie in that, you know, if you take a novel and make it into a movie, it really has to be, you have to condense it. So, you know, we stayed, it was following the basic story, but we did have to, you know, change some things around. And there were actually, it was a very interesting thing because, when we were speaking to Yap and Ina, there were a couple of times where I think it was that we had there was a character who passes the letters back and forth. Her name is Lisette, and the actual person was her sister who did it, but we didn't make it her sister. And she said, "Well, but that's not how it really happened." And she said, "Well, we have to change it for, you know, for these reasons." And at first, like, "But that's not how it happened." And then finally, she was an avid theater goer. So we said to her, "It's just like when you go to a play, you know, you really have to change things on stage." She said, "Oh yeah, I get it. Yeah, do whatever you want." You know, so she at that point, you know, she basically said, "Oh yeah, I understand. It's you know, it's a play, and so we gotta just do what works dramatically." You know, since
I was I also took the time to listen to a couple of excerpts from Sarah and Hagar.
Uh huh.
One, which is another one, and of course that's based on the story, the biblical
yeah.
story. Well,
yeah.
But one of the things that really struck me with the one piece, specifically one piece that I listened to, was just how melodic and how lyrical it was, and what hit me was I said, well, you know, because I've listened to others and a lot of contemporary stuff doesn't tend to be. But this was, I thought, my God, Puccini would be proud of this. I mean, this was just an absolutely lovely piece of music. I really
well,
enjoyed it. And forgive me for, I don't recall exactly which piece it was, but.
Yeah. Well, I don't think my style is much in common with Puccini, but thank you anyway. I mean, I guess what I would say is that, as you know, I'm a singer, I'm a cantor, so I'm a singer.
Right.
So I really care about writing music that works well for the voice. So that's certainly one thing. And I do care a lot about melody. I'd say that my musical language is, you know, it's contemporary in that it's not like the language of Puccini or the early 20th
right.
century.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely contemporary, but always with a very singing and lyrical feel to it. You're absolutely right about that. Sarah and Hagar, it's interesting. So that was my first opera, also written with an excellent librettist, Charles Kondek. And that is the biblical story of Abraham and his wife Sarah and the concubine Hagar. I mean, some people may know this story well, or some people not, you know, just Sagar,
uh-huh.
Hagar, I'm sorry. Sarah is barren, as
right.
she's an older woman, and so she gives Hagar as the concubine to Abraham and bears a child, Ishmael. And then 13 years later, miraculously, Sarah gives birth to Isaac. So it's covering that story and then the conflict that happens between the women. It, in a way, it's sort of the opposite of what we have to do with the, with Ina and Yap's story and many things, is that the biblical text is so terse. It's very, you know, it doesn't give a lot of details.
Right.
So it was the opposite. We had to, you know, and it gives them the opportunity to expand on it and, you know, think what is the relationship between Sarah and Hagar? What happens when Ishmael is born? What happens when, you know, Isaac is born and Ishmael is, and Hagar are thrown out? So it was something we were able to really expand upon the text and really wanted to focus in that opera on both the role of the women, the relationship between the women, which is only very, you know, tiny bit told about in the Bible,
uh-huh.
and also the idea of Ishmael being the father of the ancestor of the Arab peoples and Isaac of the Jewish people and the hope for reconciliation between them. I mean, a lot of the opera is really ultimately about that there needs to, you know, there's the break and needs to be a reconciliation. So
it was just lovely music. So I
thank you.
Let's touch on seed as long as we have a full trifecta here.
So seed is an opera that, you know, I have it on my website, but it's sort of a I wouldn't say it's unfinished, but it was just written and performed for a wonderful opera program that I was in called the American Lyric Theater. American Lyric Theater composer librettist program, which is a year long apprenticeship. It's not a workshop, intensive workshop for composers and librettists to learn more about the craft. And actually, Deborah Brevoort and I were both part of that. And so as the final project, I this wasn't with Deborah, this was with someone else, wrote a one act opera. And this was about it's sort of a post-apocalyptic thing of the seed depository in Norway, which is a real thing, and the last survivors who are there and the possibility of propagating the race again. So that's what it's about. And then the opera that I'm thinking of, that I'm beginning to work on, is called The Creation of Mary Shelley. It's about Mary Shelley, the writer, and how she came to write the novel Frankenstein, because that's an amazing story, because she was 18 years old. She had she was the daughter of the famous writer Mary Wollstonecraft, who had died in childbirth. She had eloped with her lover Percy Shelley, and they were hanging out with Lord Byron. And so there's just a lot of juicy stuff there. So that's still very much in the works, but something that I hope to have happen in the future.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed with that was kind of common to the three operas, and I'm assuming it will be for this one as well, is that the orchestration as such is really quite small, rather than big, you know, 60, mm-hmm. 80 member orchestras. You're talking like half a dozen to a dozen people kind of thing.
Right. Right. So a lot of that is practical.
Well, I was wondering, yeah.
Right, right. If I was commissioned by an opera company to write something with a large orchestra, I'd be very happy to do it. In this case, for example, with Steal a Pencil for Me, when we did it in New York with the workshop, it was actually a very small group. It was four instruments, but that was kind of a first draft kind of. And then when it was taken by Opera Colorado, and I was excited about that, we were doing it not at the big opera theater, but at a smaller venue, which was the Jewish Community Center. And so it was basically, how big is the pit? How many people could we fit in there? So it's very, you know, very practical. And we, by moving things around and, you know, fitting people in tightly, we figured, oh, we can fit 14 people. And, you know, for percussion, No way we could have a marimba, that's too big, but we could have a glockenspiel, you know. So there are a lot of times things are done for practical reasons. But I do actually, I love writing for, especially something like the size orchestra I did for Steal a Pencil for Me, which has some strings, some winds, piano and percussion. It really gives you a chance to be like chamber music, but then when you want to also have almost a full orchestral sound.
Well, I had noticed that when I was listening to some of the excerpts, just how powerful it was.
Thank you.
For a small group. And I think that large orchestras are cool, but I think sometimes they're a little overrated. And something like this, when I'm listening to these, particularly opera can be such an intimate experience,
right?
And a large orchestra can kind of swallow that up a little bit. And right. I think when you're talking about 14 people, it brings the whole thing down a little bit, so that you, I think you get a little closer to the action, a little closer to the singers if you're in the audience.
Right. And it's, I mean, of course, there's also then the size of the hall and literally whether you're close or
Oh, yeah,
distant.
sure.
It's of course very exciting to go to an opera at the Metropolitan Opera or one
Oh,
of the
yeah.
other huge operas of it, but my opera being done at this smaller hall, which held about, I think, 500 people, everyone was close, and it is a very intimate story.
Right.
It really is, and I think that being in the small hall was actually very, had a big impact on how powerful it was for people. It was also a beautiful production. I mean, it's such an amazing experience. I mean, this is the only opera for which I've had a full production, for
That's hard to
any,
do.
it is. But keep working. I'm working on it. I mean, very much. I want a second production for this opera.
Sure.
To, it's only been done in Denver. I'd love to have it done in New York, or I also feel it'll be very.
Salt Lake City.
Okay, why specifically Salt Lake
Well,
City
it's
music?
I have a friend of mine who was the chief costumer there at one point, and so I
Okay.
became familiar with the Utah State Sym or Utah State Opera, and they're an amazing opera company.
Okay.
That's why I thought of it.
Okay, great. We can talk about that.
Oh,
But also the possibility of it really makes seems like it would make sense to have it done in Europe if possible. To be done
yeah.
in the Netherlands or in Germany. And I've been working on making some connections in that regard. But I was just saying at that first production, it is it's always amazing as a composer when your music is performed the first time and you hear it come to life by especially if you have great performers. In this case, it's coming and I came in the middle of rehearsal set and you see all the amazing singers who have all learned it by heart and are embodying their characters, but then you've got the director, everything that's happening on stage, and it's just it was it's a very thrilling experience to see that the notes that you scratched out on paper and the ideas that came from little by little then become this thing which so many talented people are coming together to make it into a powerful drama. It's thrilling. It's
So,
thrilling.
do when you're composing, do you use any of the modern technologies? Any of
You mean
the
in terms of?
like the notation
Oh
software
yeah,
and
absolutely,
the
absolutely.
playback options and all that kind of
Yeah, the
stuff?
playback is not so important to me, though I do use it. I mean, I've developed actually a very sort of good system of the way it works for me. I always like to do my first drafts on paper, and I always as long as we're on video, I'll have like I always use these very large format notebooks, which I love because it means your ideas can spread out on the page.
Right.
And then once I do a first draft, then I put it into a notation program. I use Finale, which as you may have heard is about to not exist anymore, basically. But anyway, but I use Finale, and put it in there, and then I actually then bring it down to my iPad when I can make notes in to make further drafts. So I yes, I use whatever technology I can, but I love I definitely like writing the first draft in on paper. For me, it's just really, really
So
important.
how different is the first draft from the final product?
Depends on the piece. Depends on
Gotcha.
the piece. Yeah. Depends on the piece. There are usually a lot of. I mean, for one thing, the first draft that I write, in addition to making changes, it also often is very sketchy, or in the sense that I don't necessarily write in all the voices, even. Right? It
Oh,
may
okay.
be. It may be that I'm writing in just, the melody with a basic accompaniment, or write the whole. I write a lot of choral music, so I write the whole choral part, and the piano part is not fully sketched out. And then when I put it in the computer, then I use that to make the further changes. So it each piece has its own rhythm, so to speak, of how it develops. So, yeah.
You aside from opera, which you do very well, you do quite a bit of chamber music as well.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you're doing quite as much choral music, so that's I'm an old choir geek from high school, and so I so and I used to conduct our church choir and things like that. So so it's something that I've always had an affinity towards. Not terribly good at it, but I've always.
Well, I mean, I can talk a little about each, but so with choral music, I in a way I think that's perhaps the medium in which I'm best known. I've written a lot of choral music, a lot of it for either for Jewish choirs or for non-Jewish choirs, on somehow Jewish topics. Or, you know, again, I don't write exclusively on Jewish topics at all. I'm happy to write on, you know, lots of different things, like Mary Shelley. but well, I don't think it was Jewish as far as I know. So I love writing for choirs, and I get the chance to write for, you know, everything from community, you know, very sort of elementary, you know, I mean, you know, people, not amateur community choirs, to some professional choirs, and love trying to tailor it to each kind of thing. And I've had some wonderful choral performances this year, which I can, you know, can share with you on YouTube or whatever. I've also, this year, I'm the composer in residence for a choir in Minneapolis called Cantorai, which is a really an excellent amateur, you know, non-professional choir. And they are, so I'm going out in February, and they're going to do a recording of seven of my pieces.
Wow.
And then perform them all in concert later in the spring. Another choral performance I have coming up, which I really am, well, it's something I've had many times, but I'm always excited about, is there's a teen Jewish choir called Hazamir, which it's called Hazamir, the International Teen Jewish Choir. I'm high school Jew. I'm getting the, anyway, it's Hazamir. I'm getting the title quite confused. And they have existed for, I think, about 30 years, and they have chapters all over the United States and all over Israel, and they practice in their own chapters, and then they come together in March, rehearse for a few days all together, and then perform at Carnegie Hall this year, or Lincoln Center. And 300 to 400 kids on stage singing by heart, singing their hearts out, and singing really well. And so they're performing a piece of mine called Dayenu, which is a Passover piece this year, and I'm very, very excited about that. It's always
That's wonderful. You'll have to send me a note as we get closer to the date, and I'll put it in my blog.
Happy to do that.
Thank you. So anyway, yeah, and there was another piece that I heard, a young piece. I was on YouTube kind of putzing about, and I found a piece called Sea of Reeds. And it was a young lady playing the piano version of it. I think you wrote it originally for a trio.
Yeah, it was originally written for piano and two clarinets. This was a case where, it was three young performers. I met this clarinetist, Vasco Dukovsky, who's a Macedonian, was living in the United States, now is actually living in China with his wife. And he became kind of my clarinet muse for the next 10 years. I wrote several, included Voyagers, which you might have heard on the...
Right.
So I wrote that for him as well, clarinet and string quartet. And this was a piece which took five of my vocal Jewish pieces and turned them into the instrumental pieces. The pianist for that was an amazing pianist who the one you heard, named Alexandra Joan, a French pianist living in the United States for a long time. And it was actually during COVID, and it was like, okay, what can I work on, you know, while this stuff is going on. And so I decided I wanted to make a piano arrangement of these pieces, because, you know, I felt they worked really well as a set, and wanted to write something for her to play on her own. It was easy to do solo music at that time, right, because she could do it. And so I wrote this solo version, and she performed it, and she performed it. So
as I was listening to it, and my own prejudices started jumping in, and I'm going,
okay,
You know what? That would be cool on two guitars.
Okay.
I mean, I think I'd like to get into that.
Well, I've done. I mean, I also arranged. I've arranged the same set for piano, clarinet, and viola, and I've you know, and I'm writing a set of a different set of my songs, also arranged for piano and violin, piano trio, piano, violin, cello. I'd love to do it for two guitars, as I know you've talked to. I heard you talking about on one of your other programs. Writing for guitar is a very special thing, and I need to learn more about doing that. So if we can talk about my doing it for two
I'd be
guitars.
glad. I would be more than happy to do that. I'd be proud to be involved in a project like that.
I have
And
not
I
been.
have the guitar players to do. I don't play anymore. Well, I play, but I mean, I don't perform anymore. For a number of reasons that I won't go into at this time. But I'm still involved in. Well, I'm a board member of the Mid-Michigan Classical Guitar Society, and I conduct a guitar choir.
Oh, guitar choir,
And
cool.
it's Yeah, it's a it's really cool. We have 12 to 15 members in it, and I do most of the arranging, just because the commercial arrangements aren't very good for that kind of a setting. Because we've got people in there who are technically not real good, and don't have the time to get real good, but they enjoy playing a little bit. All the way up to we got some ringers. I mean, one of the guys, a classical guitarist, has his DMA from Eastman. Another one has his master's from San Francisco Conservatory. So I mean, we got some serious players all the way down to people who are their students, you know, and such. And it's all adults, and it is great fun. But those two players that I just mentioned, I bet they would enjoy looking at this particular piece. This would be
Okay, we
cool.
can talk about I do love arranging my music for different performances, and you know some of that is as a cantor and a Jewish musician, you know, in there are very often cases where, you know, it's like I'm doing a concert with four of my colleagues, you know,
Oh,
and it's,
sure.
you know, it's sort of like you have different settings where someone says, "Oh, can you do this for, you know, piano with a singer with a cello obbligato or so like that?" So that it's kind of fun to do that. One of the pieces in Sea of Reeds called Adonai Ro'i, which is a Psalm 23.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Oh,
That's kind of become my hit tune for better,
it's
you know. And it's in a sort of in a sad way, but because it's used a lot for funerals and for memorial services.
Sure.
So cantors and choirs sing it a lot. I have it for solo voice and then for choir. So that particular piece, I have, I don't know, like 40 different arrangements of it for different things.
Well, sure, you have to write for what you got.
Right, and to give the opportunity to give it new clothes is fun, and
Yeah.
I really enjoyed taking those vocal pieces and turning them into instrumental pieces.
That's marvelous. Well,
Yeah.
believe it or not, we're out of time. By
Okay.
way too fast.
Well, it's really lovely to talk to you, and
And
I
you,
had some
thank you
fun.
so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it a lot.
I kind of. I just want to
Yeah.
mention, so Steal a Pencil for me. The recording is it's on the Sonoluminous label,
Okay.
and it's available, you know, for streaming or downloading on Spotify, Apple, all the usual places. So it's just
Can we
look for
reach
Steal.
it through your website?
Yes, you can reach from it. So
There
actually,
will
if you
be
go
a
to
link to your website in the descriptions.
if you go to my website and then go to recordings, you can that gives you the opportunity to
Okay,
find
there
it.
will
Yeah, that
definitely
would be
be a
great.
link to there will be a link to your site.
Wonderful. Okay,
Thank you
great
so
to
much.
talk.
So nice to talk to you.
Great to
See you
talk to
later.
you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I want to thank Gerald for taking the time to come on the show, and I want to thank you too for spending time with us. Hey, if you get a moment, you should go over to his website. There's lots more information and the opportunity to hear some of his music. There's a link in the description below. Also, there is a weekly blog that I write that will update you on all my guests. Just go to www.rogerhumphrey.com. There's a tab at the top of the page. You don't have to subscribe. Boy, it would be nice if you did. Thanks again. I hope you'll come back real soon and listen to more episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.